podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash this Tuesday. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. It's been a little while since we've had a free stuff giveaway here on the Audio Stash, so we're going to have one today. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com and stay tuned to the program today for details on how you can win a free copy of Ron Mann's Grass DVD narrated by Woody Harrelson. We love to give free stuff away, and again, visit our website at normalaudiostash.com and stay tuned for more details on how you can win a free DVD today. Tuesdays here on the program, we have our Government at Work segment looking at the different state legislative efforts in regards to marijuana. Folks, there are 18 states this year considering marijuana-related legislation. Everything from decriminalization to medical access. You can get involved. In our digital age, it is easier than ever. You can visit the Normal Take Action Center. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com today. All you have to do, and get involved, folks, call your legislators, write emails. It's really the most important thing all of us can do to affect some change on this issue in America. So coming up for you right now, our Government at Work segment. Today on our Government at Work segment, we're focusing in on Ohio's proposed medical marijuana legislation. Joining us today to discuss patient access in Ohio is Brandy Zink, the executive director of the Ohio Patient Action Network. We have links to their website at normalaudiostash.com, and they're planning a legislative lobby day this week. Brandy, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for joining us today, Brandy. This week, your group is holding a lobby day, March 22nd, to try and get medical marijuana legislation off the desks of the bill's sponsors. First, tell us about those bills.
We're currently looking at the Ohio Medical Marijuana Act, similar to the bill introduced last session. And this bill would protect patients and their doctors for the use of medicinal cannabis. And it would create a registry with the state health department to identify those qualified patients for law enforcement. The legislation right now is currently just sitting on the desks of our sponsors, and we are hoping to educate more members. Ohio, we just had an election where most of our legislature changed, and so there are many, many new members that need to be educated. And so we're hoping that some of these new members will be compassionate and educated enough to have the courage to introduce this legislation.
Now, Ohio has essentially decriminalized minor marijuana possession and cultivation of less than 100 grams. It is a minor misdemeanor in Ohio, and that does not create a criminal record, at least for the first offense. So it seems that there is a generally held belief that people shouldn't go to jail for marijuana possession in Ohio.
Yes, that is correct. However, in the state of Ohio, you will lose your driver's license for a short time, and if you are a student, you will be ineligible for financial aid, and you may lose your financial aid if you are committed, prosecuted for a marijuana crime.
And even with possession decriminalized, Ohio does have in place one of those zero-tolerance drug driving laws where even the presence of trace amounts of marijuana metabolites can land a person in jail.
Well, first of all, there are drug driving laws are basing metabolite evidence is just inconceivable. We all know that cannabis stays in the body for much, much longer than it shows to be under the influence of cannabis. However, patients here would still be prosecuted under this law. Currently, we don't have any provisions for patients, and this is something that I hope our legislature will reconsider.
You mentioned a political shift there in Ohio, Brandy. With the last elections, what were some of those big changes?
Ohio now has a new governor, Governor Ted Strickland, and our kind governor. He is a man of compassion. He's also a man who understands the facts, and under this new governor, he has promised that he will not prosecute medical patients under any law that he signs. So the change that happened this year is that we have a brand new governor who is very sympathetic and open to our cause, and we have many brand new legislators that are in the House and the Senate for the first time. So it's kind of an open field or open game for us to educate these new members. And I'm sure that many of them will be more sympathetic and more compassionate because the administration as a whole is now a whole new environment.
And did things shift between parties there as well?
Well, within our state government, many of our state elected offices are now under Democratic leadership. Our House and our Senate have a slight Republican majority. But as we all know, this issue is a bipartisan issue. And I'm hoping that the Republicans will step up and take the lead on this.
Now, Ohio's legislation is certainly not happening in a vacuum this year. This year, there are 18 states considering marijuana legislation, including specifically for medical access. We saw New Mexico pass their legislation last week with very strong and vocal support of Governor Richardson there. Brandy, is there a sense that these legislators in Ohio can look around the country and see things changing and that's having a positive impact on their decisions?
Yes, most certainly. And the more states that consider this legislation, the more of a powerful message we'll send to our federal government. When our states are able to make that decision where they will no longer prosecute their medical marijuana patients, it's only a matter of time before the federal government will get the message as well. I don't know if our governor will take the lead in this because in Ohio we have lots of other issues that are present here. We have problems with our school funding. We have problems with our health care system. And we have a lot of Ohio troops that are being sent overseas to the war in Iraq. So we have lots of concerns here that are perhaps taking a more urgent need than the needs of patients here, which is unfortunate because patients, many of us don't have time to wait. I know that many of our patients won't be here to see the next session. So I know that our state has a lot on their table, but I hope that there's a place for medical marijuana patients to sit there and be considered as well.
And Brandy, have you seen medical marijuana patients prosecuted already in Ohio?
Yes, we have seen some patients get prosecuted. We've had a few patients be prosecuted under the DUID bill, where they were not necessarily under the influence of cannabis. However, upon a drug test, they will, of course, test positive and then lose their driver's license. We've had a few patients prosecuted for deciding to take their lives into their own hands and grow their medicine. Randy Brush is one of our patients who grew 4 plants and was sentenced to 3 years. Randy Brush has just recently been released to a halfway house and drug rehabilitation program, and we are thrilled that Randy has been released, but to the cost of $150,000 to the taxpayer in the state of Ohio.
Now, in regards to Randy, what were his conditions? And also, tell us about his experience in prison.
Randy has a series of spinal conditions. Randy also has other health problems with heart disease, et cetera, that he decided to not use cannabis in the smoke form. He consumes cannabis through food. So Randy, his experience in jail was horrible. The medical facilities that he had to use were substandard. He received horrible, horrible care. Poor Randy had appendicitis when he was in jail, and his caretakers there ignored his pleas for help until his appendix burst. So unfortunately, our jail system is not equipped to handle sick people, people who need constant hospitalization, constant medication, and constant monitoring. These kinds of people are not the people that we ought to be wasting our money and time prosecuting. So Randy had a horrible time in jail, and when he's out of the halfway house, I'm sure that he will be more than happy to share his experiences. Unfortunately, Randy didn't really receive any of his standard medications. So he did not receive his blood pressure medicine, his heart medication, his diabetes medicine. He was given some medication some of the time, but his medical care was not consistent, and Randy became a very sick man and behind bars.
And Brandy, what's the best method right now to get these bills off the sponsors' desks and moving forward there in Ohio?
Well, I think that this is where I will appeal to the voters, and I think that the power of the voters has a lot of influence here. When we are able to call our legislator, write them a letter, or schedule an appointment with them and sit down and discuss with them why this issue is so important to Ohio, I think that that has more of an influence now than anything. We need our voters to call your legislators and write those letters and make those appointments, because ultimately our legislators are put there by the voters, and their job is to listen to us. And I find in general that they really do care. So I'd like to empower the voter to pick up the telephone and make that phone call. You can visit ohiopatient.net to find a list of your local Ohio legislators so that you can call them.
And Brandy, let's talk about the lobby day this week on the 22nd. Tell us about what will be happening there.
Well, we are targeting unknown legislators that we have never met with before because they are brand new. So we are coming there with educational packets. I am scheduling appointments individually with a constituent and their legislator. And we're just going to be trying to educate some of these brand new members and perhaps visit a few of the members from the last session who we know are sliding towards support from us. We want to empower those legislators to know that they will not suffer any political repercussions, that the people are really with us here on this. And it is really in everyone's best interest for us to protect these sick patients.
And do you see that as the main factor here, that the politicians, rather than looking at the science and listening to the patients, that they're more concerned about their personal political position rather than the merits of medical marijuana?
I honestly think that that is the case, and that is an unfortunate part of what we're trying to change here, is that the science has been there for so long. And the patient's stories can't be any more compelling. So I really think that the unfortunate part is that many legislators are looking after their own careers. And that's unfortunate, because if they were to take the compassionate and sane role and step forward and be a leader, they wouldn't have any repercussions politically.
And in fact, it may actually help those politicians a lot to support medical marijuana.
Oh, I most assuredly would think so. Recent poll done in Ohio the last week of January was 61% of Ohioans are in favor of medical marijuana legislation.
Brandy, I want to thank you again for taking time to join us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Brandy Zink is the executive director for the Ohio Patient Action Network. They're having a lobby day this week on the 22nd. We have links to their website to get involved at normalaudiostash.com.
James Roquefort here from peopleradio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh. I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh well, now on with the show.
And now it's time today to give away some free stuff here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Yeah, it's time for free stuff here. Tuesday, a great day to give some free stuff away. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com for more information about our free stuff giveaways. But it's very simple, folks. Send an email to freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. Again, that email address is freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. You have until midnight on Wednesday, and then Thursday morning, we're going to gather up all the emails and pull one name out of the hat, and that person will win a brand new copy of Ron Mann's Grass DVD, narrated by Woody Harrelson. We'll send it out to you this week. We'd love to give away free stuff to our listeners here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, and we're going to have some very, very cool giveaways this spring and going into this summer here on the program. So stay tuned. If you like free stuff, tune into Normal's Daily Audio Stash every day. And again, visit our website for more information about this at normalaudiostash.com and send your emails to freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. Next up on the Audio Stash today, we're going to speak with Dale Gehringer, the director of California Normal. Dale Gehringer is the executive director of California Normal, and he joins us today to discuss a number of stories originating from the Golden State. The California Normal website is a wealth of information regarding marijuana and medical access. It can be found at canorml.org. Dale, thanks again for joining us here on the Audio Stash today. First, let's talk about the recent data from the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research there. We had Dr. Donald Abrams here on the program discussing his data dealing with HIV neuropathic pain, and that smoked cannabis was an effective treatment of that pain. But Dale, is that concept something completely new?
Nothing new. We've known for 10 years that marijuana was effective for HIV peripheral neuralgia. This has been widely known and reported. There were preliminary studies that showed it. Well, this report was, however, it was a published double-blind FDA-approved study, which is the so-called gold standard that the government demands. So this is the first time we've had any sort of FDA study showing efficacy of marijuana in the last 10 years since Prop 215 passed. So the government set up the standard, and now marijuana has passed that standard. There's four or five other studies that are coming out of the same source, the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research in California, which also show benefits from marijuana, I can tell you. And it's known that they show these, but you won't hear about it until the reports are finally published, and there's press releases about it. But the actual release of scientific knowledge is far behind the actual knowledge itself.
And Dale, we also spoke with Americans for Safe Access about their lawsuit seeking to have the Department of Health and Human Services retract misstatements about the medical efficacy of cannabis. Is this HIV pain data something that could give pause to government agencies and officials from making those false statements about the efficacy of smoked cannabis?
Well, I'm rather cynical about the reaction of government officials to any sort of truth. I mean, We can just look at what's been going on with climate research. It's more ammunition on our side, and I think where it will have some weight is not with this hopeless government, but in Congress, where we now have people who are Congress people who are actually supportive of medical marijuana, and I think they can point to this as a reason for Congress to revisit the policy on this, and that's where the action will be.
Also, Dale, I wanted to ask you about the highway crash data we highlighted here on the program. This was a review of fatal car accidents in America, and it looked at a number of cases where marijuana intoxication could be a factor. Now, what should responsible marijuana consumers and medical marijuana patients take note of here?
Well, this is the latest of a whole long chain of studies, and they all show the same thing, which is that just simple use of marijuana as recorded on a drug test is not seriously impairing. It's not nearly as impairing as alcohol at 0.05%, which is below the level for drunken driving in the United States. Where you do have proven problems with impairment from driving with marijuana is in cases of high blood levels, recent intoxication, which is a minority of the people out there with marijuana, driving with marijuana in their systems, just as it is for alcohol. There's a lot of people who are driving out there, you know, after they drink a beer, and that there's no problem with it. It's when you drive after drinking 10 beers that's a real problem. All of the data has come down on the same side that marijuana is safer than alcohol. There will also be a study specifically of medical marijuana and driving abilities coming out of the same California research program I described before, and we expect that to be published within the year. Reason for cautious optimism on drunken driving. My advice to people is before you go out and drive on marijuana, you know, test yourself. Can you remember where your keys are? Better yet, see whether you can stand on one leg for 30 seconds. That's a very good indication of whether, in fact, you are significantly impaired on marijuana, and there's scientific data to back that.
And you mentioned standing on one leg there. Normal did have some recent polling data that showed voters would be more likely to support a tax and regulate system for marijuana in general if there was an easy roadside sobriety test for marijuana intoxication. Is there already something like that available?
Well, that's it, actually. There's standard field sobriety tests. There's actually three of them that are used by law enforcement, walking a straight line, one leg standing, and nystagmus, which has to do with trembling of the eyes, which is hard for people to observe in themselves. But the other two you can pretty much self-test on fairly easily. They're used for drunken driving. They work for drunken driving. They've been scientifically validated, and they have recently been validated for marijuana as well. But the best one is standing on one leg steadily for 30 seconds. That seems to be the best indicator for marijuana impairment. So it's already out there. It's already in use.
We're speaking with Dale Gerringer, the director of California Normal. Dale, something else I want to touch on today is news that the fee for medical marijuana ID cards there in California is going to go up. So how much of an increase will there be, and where did that idea come from?
The state charges will be charging $66 for the cards, but then the counties charge an extra amount. So the average cost of a county card will go up to about $100. It was going to go up much higher, to closer to $200, but we fought that very hard. I must say we got a lot of county officials to oppose it, and thanks to some work in Sacramento, the Department of Health Services realized that if it charged $200 for a card, nobody would come and buy any. So with that, they cut back to $100. It's basically to cover administrative costs that they've already spent trying to set up this very bureaucratic program, I must say. But hopefully this will the $100 will be within reach of most patients. You get a 50% discount if you're on Medi-Cal. We're hoping that the card program will gradually establish itself because it does provide better protection than anything else out there when it comes to dealing with the police.
And do most medical marijuana patients have an ID card now?
Hardly anybody. We estimate there's a couple hundred thousand patients in California. Last I knew, there were 8,000 patients with the cards. Most of the counties still don't have the programs. The biggest county in the country, Los Angeles County, 10 million residents, doesn't have the card program yet. But we're hopeful that when they start up, then it will take off. There's a big demand for cards right now in L.A. because you have all these dispensaries down there, a couple hundred of them, and they really don't have any identification system set up. So maybe when the card system comes in, that will solve a problem that they've been having in L.A.
So it's not that patients don't want the cards and the protection they offer. They're just, they bureaucratically can't get one.
Some people can't get them. A lot of people can't get them because a lot of counties haven't started the program yet, even though it's 3 years after it was supposed to have started. But there's also a lot of mistrust of the program. It's not mandatory, and a lot of patients are still very fearful about registering with a state program, you know, that somehow the DEA is going to track them down or something, although there's absolutely no reason to believe that that's a substantial fear. We've had mandatory card programs in other states like Oregon, and no patients have ever gotten in trouble for that at all. And, the federal government has shown absolutely no interest in tracking down individual patients anyhow. They've had plenty of opportunity to do so in the past when they bust cannabis clubs out here. They regularly take the computers, and there's the list of all the members, and they never go after the members unless they're involved in actual cultivation and sales for the club. So I think the concern about privacy with these state ID card systems is totally is misplaced, to tell you the truth. I think that the cards actually provide good protection for patients when they encounter police. I mean, if you're in the LA airport and you have medical marijuana with you, they will let you get on the airplane if you have a card. But not otherwise.
Dale, you mentioned those federal government raids, and we should discuss those for a moment here. The DEA has openly admitted to raiding dispensaries that appear to be making a profit, but because those dispensary owners currently cannot list the costs of wholesale medicine on their tax returns and the books, doesn't that make it look like they're making more of a profit than they actually are? Because most businesses deduct that wholesale price of the products they offer as retail items.
It's hard to tell. There are some clubs where they find that the operators are driving Mercedes and, have, well-appointed apartments and so forth. And you can say that those places appear to be making a handsome profit. And you can look at others where that isn't the case at all. One thing that has not been reported is that some of these dispensaries, which are making considerable amounts of money, some of them are also paying considerable amounts of taxes, and they are reporting. A lot of the dispensaries are reporting their sales. The State Board of Equalization, which runs sales taxes out here, has been basically pressing dispensaries to pay sales tax, which is like over 8% here in California. And many dispensaries are doing that to the point where I know of at least two dispensaries that have been paying over $1 million per year in sales taxes. When the DEA raids one of these places, we have to look at the amount of tax monies that are being lost in the raid. This is not necessarily a good deal for taxpayers, but it is true that we need to get some good solid regulations so that dispensaries can feel confident about, you know, when they report revenues that they won't be criminally liable and that they can do a full and accurate accounting of everything. And that's going to require a change in federal law.
Also, on the other side of this here, Dale, you know, do you feel that medical marijuana is being held to a higher standard somewhat than other medicines? I mean, no one questions the compassion of the big pharmaceutical company CEOs who get personal salaries and bonuses of millions of dollars every year. But there's this growing call to have medical marijuana be a not-for-profit industry in California. But, you know, healthcare in general in America is certainly a for-profit industry.
Absolutely not. I don't know when it's been a crime for Americans to make a buck on medicine or anything else, you know. This is sort of a laughable double standard. Although in other ways, of course, it is true that the dispensaries are very unregulated compared to, say, you know, a pharmaceutical company. There's no regulations out there. The federal government has declared them illegal, so there's no federal regulations, and the state has done only minimal regulation because of the federal illegality. So, you know, if you brought them into line more, they would have to do a lot more paperwork and comply with a lot of more arbitrary bureaucracy. And on the other hand, they would be free to make millions and millions of dollars and have all the Mercedes that they wanted.
Dale, this has been a wonderful conversation today, and I really want to thank you again for joining us to discuss all of these topics.
Well, you're welcome.
Dale Gehringer is the director of California Normal. They can be found online at canorml.org. And we have links to them on our website at normalaudiostash.com. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMALAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.